hope I'm visible presently, and I hope I'm audible, irrespective of my color. Can you see me and can you hear me at the back? Oh, if you can see me, that's okay. I don't have to use any skin lightener so that I could be visible. And if my voice is a shop steward voice, then I'm happy if you can hear me at the back there. My name is Bevan Kokwana. I'm just going to be chairing this session. We are very happy that you are here, and we want to welcome you sincerely in this parliament. This is a mental health day organized by parliament with a program for improving mental health care. And fortunately, the Department of Health is here with us, but it's mainly organized by parliament and Prime. I'll call it Prime, but it's a program for improving mental health care. So you are all welcome. I'm going to try and open up briefly, just to set the tone. And having done that, we'll ask the Department of Health just to give us a synopsis as to what they're doing for mental health in South Africa. And after that, there's going to be a panel discussion. Panel discussion is not going to be people sitting here, but it's going to be people that we're going to call, and they make short presentations, and then we'll have discussions, questions and discussions after. So that's how the program is going to be going. Maybe in welcoming you, I just need to talk a few things. I'm not going to be very long, I'm going to be very short. I happen to be the chair of the Portfolio Committee for Health in Parliament. And as you know, there are three things that are done by Parliament. But one of those things that is done by Parliament is to do oversight. I'm not going to mention the other two, but I just want to say, as we do oversight, we look at how healthy South Africans are and where do we think we need to do more and where are we doing well. But I'm just going to be talking about mental health today, briefly. Talking about mental health, you know, our country, we regard it as a developing country. And it being a developing country, one of the areas that I think are very important for development is mental health. If you don't have good mental health services and people get involved in all sorts of things, you can't have a good development of that particular country. You can imagine if people get anxiety, depressed, and they're off work, what is going to happen to the economy of the country? You can go on and mention things that are happening. You can mention the crime that is happening, because sometimes we diagnose people to be mentally abnormal when they do serious things and they get involved in serious things and they get to jail. Or people get scared of coming to that country because of crime, only to find that that crime is related to mental health conditions, which we never take serious. So for us, as Parliament, with crime, we regard this day as a very important day. Firstly, for making people aware of mental health. Secondly, for making sure that we do something about mental health, we take it very seriously. Now, I want to go on and say, sort of, there's two, if somebody is normal or well, there's always two areas into a person. There's a physical part, there's a mental part. As medical practitioners or health professionals, we tend to concentrate on the physical part because it's easy to handle. And when there's an organic lesion, if somebody has got a pneumonia, it's very easy to deal with that. And it's very easy to see results. But when you talk about mental health, it's a very difficult one because most of the time it's a functional problem, which you can't really say the lesion is actually in this area. If I remove this, then I know that I'll be better. It's related to a lot of chemistry that is abnormal and a lot of functional problems that you can't really pinpoint. And it makes it very confusing, and a lot of us tend to shy away from those areas because they are confusing. As a result, we tend to go for the physical abnormalities and problems rather than concentrate on mental health, let alone that when you deal with mental health problems, sometimes when you talk about them or read about them or you're taught about them, you end up thinking that they're affecting you. You are the one who's involved. And you feel, no, let me not know what I am. Let me rather do something else because I'm afraid of being labeled that I'm psychotic, I'm psychopathic, because this book describes me. Yet most of the time it's not describing you, but it's just describing mental health service, because all of us have got some of those traits. When you talk of a bipolar, you're talking of a spectrum. And I think most of us have got the bipolar, but it depends on the extremes. And now when the book describes that, or somebody describes it, you can think that, look, I'm involved, and you tend to shy away because you say, no, I don't want to know that I'm mad. Let me leave this thing. So we tend to shy away from mental health services. The second challenge, as we have been doing oversight, which we have observed, is that when you talk of mental health care services, especially in a country of ours where there are diverse communities, it has got to do with your culture. You can go to where I was born and grew up. There are certain things that I regard as normal. But if you get somebody from somewhere who goes to my place, they can think that I'm mad if I'm doing a particular thing, which I regard it as my culture. And there's that diversity in South Africa that we've got to work around, that we're a diverse country, we've got different cultures, but we've got to live within ourselves and understand that even if somebody does this, it's still within their culture to do this. So we've got to have a broader understanding of each other, not necessarily knowing everything, every culture, but understand the broader perspective of the cultures that we're working with. I know in my language in Xhosa, I'm not sure about the other languages, there's no term for depression in Xhosa. But there is what we call depression. But if you talk to somebody who's Xhosa, it's just too extreme that you are either psychotic or you're normal. There's nothing in between. But we know that there's depression, there's anxiety, there's stress, there's all sorts of things that are there which are not known in the other cultures. And not only that we're talking about these cultures, and in fact there are other ways of treating people, the traditional healers, the divine people who treat people. So all those things, they are part of South Africa and they're part of understanding the mental health of a human being. We're still in the same country in South Africa. We've got a past. Much as your past is your past, and the past is gone, there's nothing that you can do. But for you to look into the future, you've got to know where you come from. If you don't know where you come from, you might not know where you're going. So it becomes important to know where you are coming from so that you can learn from the mistakes that you did. And as South Africans, we've got a past, which complicates how we should be handling mental health care, mental health services. Our past, I don't think we need to shy away from the fact that we've got a past that we were at war with each other within the same country, literally fighting each other, literally killing each other in the same country. And I don't remember sitting down saying, okay, let's get psychologists, psychiatrists to make us understand that the war that we're engaged in is over. So we are all South Africans. We've got to be patriotic about our country. And I don't remember that happening. And when you see certain things happening, when you analyze, you tend to understand that they are happening because we never, there's a step that we bypassed, which we should have gone into. And in fact, that has actually left us with, I was reading the National Development Plan, which talks about the fact that we don't trust in each other in South Africa. You look at the consumers of the public goods, our communities, there's very little trust for our government. You look at the public sector and the private sector, they don't trust each other. You look at the communities and the private sector, mainly I'll be quoting health because I'm in the health sector. You find that people don't trust the private sector because they think the private sector is concentrating on getting more money out of the people and so on. But we seem not to be trusting each other. And all those things, they're affecting us psychologically. They're affecting our mental health. So these are some of the things that we've got to accept that they are there, and we've got to find ways of dealing with them. That's why I think, and with those that we discussed, we thought it was important that we should have something of this nature. I don't have to go into the migrant labor system that we had in South Africa for years, where the families were broken. I leave Eastern Cape and I go to Rustenburg to a mine. I leave my wife there with kids. When I get to the mine, I stay there for 3 years without a wife, and I get another wife, I get married to somebody else, I've got another wife there, I've got another house, there's another house at home. Obviously, those families are broken. And those kids are going to grow without knowing the father, growing under the mother. And when they become psychopathic, as the years go, it's not going to be a surprise that they become psychopathic because of the fact that they don't know what is right and what is wrong because they don't have a father figure. So these are some of the challenges that we're actually finding because of our past. But it does not mean that because of our past, we need to continue fighting, we need to do that. But that tells us that probably, maybe I need to choose better words, I don't know, but I'm not English speaking, but maybe we need to find a way of cleansing ourselves. And if we want to cleanse ourselves, obviously we've got to talk about psychologists, psychiatrists, that we've got to go through so that they help us to forgive. Obviously we're not going to forget because the brain is a brain and it can keep a lot of things. We forgive each other, but we say we've got this past that we cannot do anything about, but we have learned lessons from the past. We need to move forward. And that has got to be done by psychologists, by psychiatrists. Now, the next question that you ask yourself, in South Africa, how many psychiatrists do we have? How many psychologists do we have? Even those that we have, are we using them optimally? Are we remunerating them optimally? Are they everywhere in South Africa so that they can mitigate us against these things that I've actually mentioned above? Are we ready to forgive? Not necessarily to forget, but to forgive and say, we've got this beautiful country, we've got to live together. And this can only be done by psychologists, by psychiatrists. Not everybody can engage in this, but with the shortage that we have, obviously we've got to relook and say, where do we go? Obviously that goes to another area which I've noticed, I don't know, but it's something that always bothers one. You drive around most of these small towns and you find that there's somebody sitting, people who've got mental illnesses. And when you drive around those towns, you always find people who are psychotic walking on the roads alone, no family to look after. And doing sorts of things, I've seen somebody being raped by somebody who's psychotic. I've seen somebody bashing people's cars because that person is psychotic. And you can see this person is psychotic. It's not a question of being a thug or a criminal. It's psychotic. And we see all, a lot of them, where I come from, Tsolo, there's somebody we use to treat people she's got divine spirit, that's what she calls herself. And people go there, but they end up not going back home. They end up staying in Tsolo. And they're vagabonding in those streets. And they're walking around, they're bashing people, they're doing all sorts of things. These are some of the challenges that we have in South Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, members that are here, if this was just time to open and set the tone for what we need to do, and I was doing it, having gone around South Africa, I might not have seen everything that is happening in South Africa, but I was trying to scan South Africa and trying to show you how important is mental health services, which fortunately the department is here. Whether they would agree with me or they wouldn't, but it's something that I've seen as doing oversight in South Africa with some of the members that are in the portfolio committee. I'm not going to carry on anymore except for going further and asking Dr. Sifiso Phakathi to come forward and address us from the Department of Health. He's a director of mental health and substance abuse in the Department of Health, in the National Department of Health. So I'll call on him to come and address us. Oh, you want to address us where you are?
They connected me here.
Oh, okay.
If okay.
You've got roots there. Oh, no, if you've got roots there, then you can take that. Okay. So we'll allow him to talk where he is. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Dr. Bokwane. And honorable members of the Portfolio Committee for Health, representatives from non-governmental organizations who are here, researchers, academics, users that are here, mental health care users, are very important to us today. Good afternoon. Maybe to start off, Chair, to say apologies for the Honorable Minister for Health. I know it's outside my protocol to go through those motions. October is quite a busy month, so we are all over, and particularly also the Director General for Health, who is in Geneva during this period, and she impressed on me that she would have wanted to be here for many reasons. Chair, you will recall that throughout the process of the Mental Health Care Bill that is in front of Parliament, she has personally addressed both houses and participated in the process there. Chair, on the 12th of June, the Department of Health presented to the Portfolio Committee for Health Services on the state of mental health services and the plan going forward. We understood that when you invited us to participate today, it will be more of updating this committee and taking South Africa in confidence and popularizing the plan that has been adopted to go forward. So that's really the purpose, to provide an overview on the key findings of the review that we said had taken place, initiated by the Minister of Health in 2011, and discuss briefly the actions and interventions that are being implemented to further transform the mental health system. As a way of background, in 2011, the National Health Council took a resolution after going through a similar debate, Chair, that you have just used in your opening, mainly around the concerns they were hearing from the users, the public out there, and instructed that we review the mental health system and come out with very clear objectives that need to be met going forward. In this regard, the national consultative process ensued, led by the MSCs and the minister himself, which culminated to provincial summits held in all 9 provinces, and it culminated to a national mental health summit which was held in St. George's Hotel in the Gauteng province, under the same theme that the House has chosen for the discussion today, which is scaling up investment in mental health for a long and healthy life for South Africans. The summits reviewed both the quality and quantity of mental health services that were being provided. They identified key challenges in the mental health system, provided information on some best practices that had emerged since 1994. Just again, this point was impressed on us by our leadership that a number of times we concentrate on the bad things that are happening and we fail to recognize certain best practices that have emerged in the system. There was an agreement in the summit on the priorities that must be implemented as part of reorganizing the mental health system. The summit adopted what was called the Ekurhuleni Declaration, which consisted of 11 action areas. The summit, in its closing, committed to using the outputs to finalize the mental health policy framework, which had been developed at that point in time, and to assist in its implementation. Just to give an overview of what the review picked up, again, our understanding was that since we're doing a follow-up presentation to the House where we discussed in detail the data, the statistics on many of these areas, we chose this time to just summarize the key points in the 10 minutes that we've been allocated. What was noted in the general review was that good progress had been made in enacting mental health legislation and policy. And the history of that, the ruling party came into power in 1994. In the green policy on health, there was about 3 pages dedicated to mental health. In the white paper for transformation of health services, again about 4 or 5 pages detailing policy on mental health. Further on in 1997, there was a policy guideline on mental health. And beyond that, mental health legislation was passed in 2002, came into operation in 2004 in December. So there was good progress around that, setting out clear procedures around how people with those suffering from mental illnesses will be admitted, how their rights will be protected, providing a structure within which we will be developing mental health services. The challenges were mainly in the review that we picked up that not everything was rosy in implementing these policies and legislation, so we accepted that point. The other point that was noted in the review was that neuropsychiatric disorders ran third in the contribution to the overall burden of diseases in this country, after HIV and AIDS and other infectious diseases. So we've got a huge problem in our hands. In terms of the numbers, in terms of the prevalence, about 16.5 adults in a 12-month period would suffer from a diagnosable mental disorder. In that group, the most common conditions that had been detected were depression, anxiety, and substance abuse. In the review, it was noted that mental health unfortunately intersects with the other health priorities and outcomes. Whether, for instance, it's simply an issue of you have put a patient on chronic medication, what the results show or studies show is that if a person is not mentally well, compliance to medication becomes an issue. So it cuts across many issues, whether it is outcomes in terms of infant health, mother's health, a number of the priorities. HIV and AIDS itself is a major intersection. The review also pointed out many of the factors that the chair has alluded to, which is high levels of poverty, unemployment, violence in the country, substance abuse, and other adversities and increasing vulnerabilities. I will not go back to that in detail. As I say, Many of those have been pointed out by the chair. We are a fractured society. We come from a past which we have not been able to navigate well many of the challenges that come from them. The other major issue that came up in the review was the gap between demand for services and the supply for mental health services. Studies had shown that only about 25% of those with a mental disorder had access to formal mental health services. I would like to come back to that at a later stage just to try and understand what that tells us and how we're responding to that. It was noted that the systems for mental health were weak, and there was weak institutional capacity at various levels, from the national system to the provincial system to the district system to the sub-district system. One example that I could lift out for this house just as an argument is that when you plan for health services at a district level, there has to be a sub-district plan that articulates what activities the district will undertake. In the absence of dedicated focal points that attend to mental health problems in those districts and sub-district levels, what we found when we evaluated the district plans was that you would hardly find an articulation of mental health and activities that will be undertaken by a district around mental health because of the institutional capacity at that level. The other problem quickly that came out in the review was that we're sitting with old infrastructure for mental health and largely with the central hospitals or the specialized mental health facilities. And in terms of its history, just to say that many of you will recall that would not have been purposely built to look after mental health care users. They would either have been a military barrack, which was then converted to a psychiatric hospital, or when the leprosy hospitals were closed, they then converted to psychiatric hospital. So it's all dilapidated infrastructure. And unfortunately, over the years, because of the cost of revitalization, these have not been revitalized at the speed to which they would be fit for purpose now. It was also picked up that there was inequality in distribution of resources, including human resources, among other things, within provinces. And I think the chair has alluded to the issue of psychiatrists. Just a recent review points to even a scarier figure. They are still cleaning up that data, but just a provisional figure from the 160 that was mentioned, or 150, it looks like in the public sector we can only find about 70 psychiatrists working in the public sector. And psychologists, we can give those numbers as well. There is continued over-reliance on specialized hospitals, meaning the other levels of healthcare, whether it's primary healthcare, district hospitals, regional hospitals, will not necessarily deal with mental health problems. When there's a diagnosis of mental illness, the tendency is that we still send many of the patients to the specialized psychiatric hospitals. The review also showed that there's limited investment in community-based mental health services, so everything still gets sent to the tertiary hospitals. The review also showed that there's limited information on mental health, basically for planning purposes, as well as to inform the public themselves about just mental health issues so that you can enhance the self-agency in dealing with their problems. It was noted that there were challenges in the production and supply and retention of mental health practitioners. One example was that the summit representatives pointed to was the migration of psychiatric nurses when, for instance, policies such as OSD were introduced. There was a sudden migration to general health services, so which then depleted the capacity in the psychiatric hospitals themselves, as well as the focal persons who used to reside in community health clinics, primary health care clinics, and that level. Not to suggest that that policy was negative, but one of the reports in the summits was that that adversely affected the mental health environment in terms of just retention of mental health practitioners. The review noted that, or pointed out that there were challenges with access to and supply of appropriate mental health technology, equipment, and medicines. Another important matter that was raised was the prevalence of stigma in society and discrimination, which is still prevailing, public ignorance about mental health, poor coordination of efforts with other key sectors, whether it is directly between health and social development, whether it's with housing, if for instance you would want to place recovered mental health care users in communities and find them a house or an RTP to settle them down. So there's poor coordination in that area across many sectors. What the review also pointed out, and participants in the summits pointed out, was that in terms of documentation, it was clear that there was sufficient evidence that there are effective mental health interventions, whether they're aimed at prevention or treatment itself. There is good evidence recorded for in terms of those interventions. Maybe then to move on to just as a response to these problems, to say what has been done. Subsequent to these summits that were held, as I said, provincial summits up to the National Health Summit, which was led by a minister, stakeholders were then brought back again to draw up a strategic plan. From the many areas that participants in this summit had said are problems. And of course, a strategic plan in the sense that you cannot do everything at the same time. You need to time yourself, select a few key activities so that you can be able to implement them within the resources that are available. This plan, Chair, has been adopted by National Health Council in July, which is just 2 months ago. We had meant to bring to this House already printed copies to publicize this plan. Unfortunately, things in terms of the work that needs to go into finalizing that document didn't go our way. There is a plan to launch this mental health policy framework and strategic plan by the ministry. 8 catalytic objectives were selected by the work group. Some of the members are here in this House, which minister requested to participate in that process. They will introduce themselves, I think, later on to declare their interest in this matter. What had also happened in that process, Chair, is to point out that the World Health Organization had also undertaken a comprehensive review in the same period of 2 years to look at the state of world mental health. We then adopted our plan alongside and borrow a lot of the principles from what also WHO pronounced on as major challenges and strategies to get us to move forward in this area. In this mental health policy framework and strategic plan, the minister and the MECs adopted this model by the World Health Organization that I've just put up in the screens, which merely suggests this, a number of things can be interpreted, but I would like to point out a few. One of the things is that if we were to get good figures on expenditure on mental health, we probably would agree that quite substantive resources of what we spend on mental health goes to the top of this pyramid, which in effect is what we need less. What we need more is what is at the bottom in this triangle. And I would like to pick out a few areas, and relating to the data on the missed opportunities for treatment, which is about the gap, which is about 25% of people who had a positive mental diagnosis couldn't access mental health care. What it emphasizes, maybe briefly, is that it's critical that we build the capacity for self-agency in dealing with mental health problems, which is self-care at the bottom. We cannot erode that. It's important that human beings, whether it's by providing information, whether it's just to know about what to do, about bringing up children, that basic knowledge, it's important that families are able to have self-agency in dealing with problems. We have to invest on that using various methods. The second level is informal community mental health care. What has been found in studies is that the work that is done largely by churches, non-governmental organizations, and all those groupings at the community level, they're able to adapt to the science and culture of communities in responding to the needs of communities. We need to invest as well in that area. The third level that we need to invest on is primary health care. This is where now we use the formal health system to screen and detect positively for and find positive, that positive action to detect mental health services. The next level in this model suggested and what has been adopted is that all general hospitals in this country will be prioritized to have a psychiatric unit to admit acute users, whether it is voluntary care, assisted care, involuntary mental health care users. It's important that we create these facilities to create access and provide for equitable distribution in the country. Alongside that level of services, to deal with what the chair pointed out is sometimes in communities you come across some of the users vagabonding the streets, maybe they haven't got a place for residence. Is alongside the psychiatric units in general hospitals, within communities, the policy that has been adopted says we will develop community-based facilities. This will be in the form of daycare facilities for chronic mental health care users, where a family who has got a chronic mental health care user during the day will be able to drop off the user and be able to drive to work. In the afternoon, they pick up the user if they choose so. Alongside this level of services, we will develop purposely, which had never been done in the country, residential components, which are group homes, supervised living units for this category of users. In the same level, we will purposely develop as well services to cater for severe and profound intellectual disabilities, whether it is daycare centers as well as supervised living units and at that level. And dealing with the top in this pyramid, what is critical and urgent is that all the psychiatric facilities that have been identified to be dilapidated should be revitalized. I've alluded to many of the detail around how we're going to reorganize the system, but in the 8 catalytic activities, maybe some of what I've said will be a repetition, but as a priority, NHC has decided that alongside the specialist teams that were introduced in the other areas, which was obstetrics, gynecology, pediatrics, they've pronounced and said we will introduce specialist mental health teams in each of the districts. In terms of implementation, we are starting off with the 11 national health insurance pilot sites. So that decision has been made. I'll just show you some of the work that has been done in preparation for that. Another decision that has been taken, Chair, in the House, is that to address many of the psychological needs that you alluded to earlier in communities, certain selected health centers will be designated and clinics will be designated to provide psychological services. Again, this is a major shift in how we provided psychological services in this country. All along, psychologists have been placed in tertiary facilities, largely doing clinical care. The shift here is that we're creating purposely we will capacitate clinics with psychologists to provide psychological services at this level. Some of the activities that already have taken shape in the, more especially in the National Health Insurance pilot site, is that mental health has been included already in as part of chronic care in primary health care services. This slide just shows you briefly some of the work that we've done. We've just submitted a bid for the specialist, the district specialist in mental health Just on the far right, the total of about 23 million, that's just an example. It has been costed by the department, and we're hoping that funding to roll out this will be available in the 2014-15 budget to implement priority one or the catalytic objective number one. The second area was around the institutional capacity I alluded to. In terms of progress, Minister has approved that we establish a ministerial advisory committee on mental health. There was a provision in the Mental Health Care Act, Section 71, which he has activated for this purpose, so that they are able to assist him in implementing this plan and monitor the implementation of this plan, briefly. The second activity around that, in terms of institutional capacity, is that purposely within provinces, we will be strengthening the mental health directories so that they have the capacity to plan, implement, and monitor activities. The third area that was prioritized, which is provided for by the Mental Health Care Act, is the establishment of mental health review boards. In all provinces, all nine provinces, we have mental health review boards. But what has been in question is the functionality of these boards. Other areas around surveillance, research, and innovation, what has been approved is that we need to move strongly and ensure that there's a system to collect mental health data for planning. In the national health agenda, we will incorporate certain key research areas that will form part of that and be funded by the National Department of Health. I think alongside that is to monitor the implementation around the health sector drug master plan, which was passed in 2011. I've alluded to the fourth objective here when I was talking about the reorganization of the mental health services. But the major components really are that build an attachment to health inpatient units in designated district hospitals and regional hospitals to provide for emergency admissions, a 72-hour assessment, care treatment and rehabilitation of voluntary assisted and involuntary mental health care users. One of the major areas in the review that was pointed out was that as we revitalize the and build mental health facilities, there was absence of correct design or appropriate design specifications for building mental health facilities. And I think some of the examples are out there for all of us to see. CSIR, as I speak, has been already appointed and work is in progress to develop these design specifications, and they will be passed soon. One province was lifted up here, which up to 2013 still doesn't have a single psychiatric hospital. The major challenge in that province is that the forensic psychiatric patients still reside in the other provinces, which makes it difficult for families to visit them. The National Health Council pronounced that in that provinces we will remedy the problem. Going forward, there will be a psychiatric hospital built in this province that we name here Mpumalanga. Again, this was a problem of previous and historical planning. I alluded to the fact that we'll revitalize all the dilapidated mental health facilities already in the infrastructure budget for 2013-14. A number of them have been included as part of the revitalization. I've alluded to the fact that we'll develop purposely, government will develop community residential facilities to include halfway houses, assisted living units, group homes, to provide accommodation for chronic mental health care users, as well as severe profound intellectual disabilities. In the area of technology, just the point was around strengthening the essential drug list. What came out in the review is that while there's a sufficient listing of drugs that can be available for primary health care, we still get some drug stockouts around certain drugs. So there will be an effort to strengthen the EDL and the procurement systems for neuropsychiatric drugs or neurolytics. We will equip clinics, as we alluded earlier, that certain designated clinics and community health centers, we provide psychological interventions. What the movement in psychology pointed out is that it has become increasingly difficult to access relevant equipment for use by psychologists. So the Department of Health, as a decision by NHC, will provide the necessary infrastructure and equipment for this category of workers. In dealing with the duplication between sectors, in line with a decision that had already been taken by National Health Council, there's a certain health commission that will be established, and mental health will be included in the agenda and work program for that commission. Around human resources, the main points really are that in the review, it was found that many of the general practitioners still have some what I would call negative attitudes towards mental health, which the participants pointed out to the fact that students spend limited time in their training and orientation in or dealing with mental health care users. The proposal is that working with the College of Medicine and the Health Professions Act, we will relook at this and to be able to get medical interns, nurses, pharmacists to rotate through psychiatric units in district hospitals and regional hospitals so that we improve on their attitudes in dealing with mental health care users. Already I alluded to the fact that in the national health insurance sites, primary health care workers are already trained in a program that has been developed, which we call PC101, Primary Health Care 101, which is a guideline really on how to routinely screen for chronic health problems, including mental health, and be able to intervene at that level. One sensitive area which was pointed out by the summits was the why we produce these numbers. In many of the provinces, language then becomes a barrier between a psychologist and a user, a psychiatrist and a user, because the majority of the mental health care workers have been trained in the non-indigenous languages. There's an effort here, Chair. We have been directed to work with all the training institutions with a message that is clear that wherever training is taking place, at least these mental health practitioners be trained in one language or indigenous language in that province where they are trained. The last objective, Chair, is what you alluded to and we alluded to, which is making sure that we build the resilience among individuals, the self-agency, by providing relevant information, educate the public around these issues, deal with stigma and discrimination purposely using a public education campaign and a mental health campaign, which is part of what you're doing here. Chair, as a way forward, we have been directed as the National Directorate by National Health Council to conduct provincial roadshows on this plan, to popularize it. We've been directed to support provinces to develop provincial plans towards implementing this mental health policy framework and strategic plan. We've been directed to secure the relevant funding for this plan. I alluded earlier that some components of the plan were costed already and submitted by the Ministry to Treasury for consideration for the 2014-15 budget year. This plan we've initiated implementation. National Health Council has directed that we will report on this plan periodically, and we're hoping that as part of oversight from this committee, we will be also ordered to come and report on this plan periodically to inform the portfolio committee and the nation about how we're doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor. I think that was, in a nutshell, what is being done by the department. We are paying taxes so that somebody could look after us, and we definitely think that if we are mentally abnormal, there could be no development. So we need to do well physically and mentally to have a proper development. So this is what they are trying to do, informed by you to do this. So, but there's going to be questions, there's going to be time where you're going to be asking questions, and I don't think it's going to leave very soon. But for the sake of time, can we go on further and call the panelists? There's somebody from the Department of Social Development who has been sent to talk to us. I'm not sure whether he or she is here. It's a Mr. Mohotsi Karimodimo, the Director for Substance Abuse and Chair of the Central Drug Authority. I'm not sure that, I'm not sure whether you've got roots where you're sitting. But if you don't have roots, you better come here so that we can see you. You are too dark where you are. We want to see you this side.
Chair, I've got roots here.
Oh, you've got roots. You are not like him. I don't think your roots can move. We can take off your roots. We are requesting you to come this side. Unless there's something that you have smoked. While you are coming here, can I, not that the other people are not important, but can I acknowledge the presence of the Chair of Women and Disability from Parliament? She's sitting up there. We tried to call her here so that she could come and help us in chairing, but she doesn't want to come here. I think she's very shy. Okay, give over to you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, stakeholders present here today. Chairperson, taking into consideration the issue of time allocated here, I'm just going to respond to the theme. I'm just going to, take into consideration the issue of time allocated, I'm just going to respond to the thing to say what progress have we made up to this phase as government. Yeah. And then, Chairperson, I have not prepared a slide presentation, taking into consideration that we have been given 2 to 3 minutes. Chairperson, maybe as a point of departure, we need to, as the Department of Social Development and the Central Drug Authority acknowledge that drugs and alcohol abuse both have negative consequences on the mind of a human being, either temporarily or permanently. Chairperson, in response to the issue of drug abuse and alcohol abuse, the Department of Social Development inaugurated the Central Drug Authority in March 2018, and then following that, the President of the country, Honorable Jacob Zuma, proclaimed the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act. And then the Minister of Social Development then promulgated the regulations for the same act. The Central Drug Authority tabled the National Drug Master Plan to Cabinet on the 26th of June this year, and then it was approved. Maybe now looking into what is contained in the National Drug Master Plan. The National Drug Master Plan has got three pillars, and then it runs for a period of 5 years, meaning that it's running, will be running from 2013 until 2017. And then these three pillars are supply reduction, demand reduction, and harm reduction. Supply reduction is more concerned with the law enforcement, and demand reduction then is where we and the Department of Health find ourselves, because we focus on the issue of our prevention and the treatment there. Chairperson, we have been embarking on prevention programs, awareness raising campaign, together with the Department of Health and the other departments that form part of the national or part of the Central Drug Authority, as well as the NGO sector and the community-based organizations. We have realized that the prevention, as you think you are aware, Chairperson, as well, that the prevention is better than cure. To avoid treating people, we rather start by preventing people from going into treatment. But as government, we have established treatment programs. And then we are aware that the Department of Social Development can handle the issue of treatment from a certain level to a certain level. Like, for example, the intention of our treatment is to try to reduce the harm caused by substances, more especially drugs and alcohol, on human beings. And then in some cases, yes, we are unable to handle those cases, and then they are handled by the Department of Health. So the Department of Health in our treatment programs comes at the very beginning. When a person has been referred to the treatment facility, there needs to be a comprehensive assessment to determine whether this person has to be in the treatment facility or should be referred to the Department of Health for handling. Because in most cases of hard drugs like you are Nyaope, we find that in some cases we are unable to handle those people immediately. They have to be referred to the Department of Health for handling. But that's a way of trying to cushion the effects of our substance abuse on our service users. We place them in treatment where we are able to handle them. And currently, Chairperson, we have established 7 public treatment centers around the country for ensuring that the people receive treatment services. And then we are funding some of the private treatment centers. Currently we have 47 private treatment centers, and then of which 25 government is funding. And then we have, because we have realized that in some cases we are able to put together physical facilities, and then we have also resorted to outpatient treatment services to help those who are, in particular, those who are in the rural areas that cannot travel long distances to our treatment facilities. The government has also gone further than that, to intensify the issue of combating substance abuse. The cabinet has established the Interministerial Committee on Combating Substance Abuse. And then what has happened to this chairperson is that there are several policy decisions that the Interministerial Committee has taken. Like, for example, we have realized that by leaving the age of purchase and consumption of alcohol to 18, we are really exposing our own children to danger. And then the cabinet, the IMC has taken the decision to increase that from 18 to 21. And then we are also looking into the issue of how to reduce, more in particular, the issues of alcohol outlets in the community, because we have felt that there are so many at this point in time. And if we are going to leave them as such, we may have our problems increasing, like the problem of fetal alcohol syndrome. Chairperson, is also on the rise as a result of alcohol. So we are trying to keep alcohol abuse in that regard. Chairperson, taking into consideration the time that has been allocated to me, I should think I should stop there.
Thank you very much. That was eye-opening. But Ladies and gentlemen, I think we are going to have time to interrogate all these presentations, short as they might be. So all the speakers are going to remain here so that we can ask them. So if you've got any questions or clarities, you can just jot them down. Now the next person is from Western Cape Department of Health. I hope he's here. Carol,
yes, Dean. Yes, yes. Chair, Dr. Karim, Sergeant Karim, I'm standing in for the MEC who is not able to attend today. So I will, and I think, Chair, maybe if I can follow on from where the National Department of Health left off, and just in my 2 or 3 minutes give you a sense, give the House a sense of what the Western Cape Department of Health is doing around the plan. So, Chair and Honourable Members of the House, I think the first, if I can just maybe reflect on the burden of disease, and Professor Lant is going to give you some more detail, and we will give more detail about that. But in the Western Cape specifically, one of the key problems and dilemmas we obviously face is the exploding substance abuse epidemic, particularly TIC. And that has placed an inordinate burden on our, not only mental health services, but generally on our hospital services. So to give you some example, and I'm sure when Professor Lang does some statistics, you'll be able to see it in that context. Of the inpatients that we admit into our psychiatric hospitals, we found that about 53% of those patients, in fact, have a comorbid substance dependency. So it's an incredibly high burden of substance dependency that we have to deal with in this particular province. And the bigger load of the service, though, is at the primary care level. And in the year before last, 2012 financial year, we had about 255,000 mental health visits alone at the clinic and community health center level. So you can obviously see that that's where our patients are presenting in the service. We had roughly about 6,000 inpatient admissions in our psychiatric hospitals, and we had about 28,000 outpatient visits. So this gives you a feel for the size of the dilemma that we're facing with. But I'm sure you want to know, and the House probably wants to know, what is our response to that, and where, in terms of the mental health plan that the National Department has presented. I think the kind of issues that we've been dealing with fits very neatly into that context. The philosophy that we have embarked on is strengthening the community-based primary health and district levels of the service. So that's where we're putting a lot of our emphasis on. We have produced a plan, and it's just been released yesterday by our MEC for Minister for Health, Minister Botha. And within that plan, you'll see some the crux of the philosophy of what we want to do in terms of strengthening the services. So at the community-based level of the service, our plan is to have more community-based workers. So for every 270 households, we will have a community health worker. And we will obviously have rehab care workers as part of that platform. And so that will be the crux of the people who will drive the service. It's also a component that improves infrastructure, as the national plan outlines as well. We've also in the Western Cape got a very unique service called Assertive Community Teams, and our colleagues here from the province will be able to talk through that, whereby we it's teams that basically improve the provision of care for mental health users at community level, at the community-based care level. And it's worked really well, and in fact, we plan to roll that out throughout the service and throughout the province. At the next level, at the primary care level, there we will also strengthen that by, and we've always in the province had a tradition for a long time of specific mental health care nurses, and we will increase the number of nurses and the nurse-driven service at the primary care level, supported obviously by the medical officer, Dr. Taylor of people, and so provide that will be the key, the core of the service there. At the acute hospital levels, and there's obviously been a lot of attention around that because the beds, that's where the hospital beds fit in into the picture. And I note the article in the Burger yesterday, about some of the pressures on the beds that we face. So currently, at the moment, if I take all the beds that we have in the province, and the different levels of beds as outlined in the National Department of Health presentation. At the moment, we have about 2,135 beds, and that includes everything. That includes the psychiatric specialist hospital beds, it includes the regional hospital beds, so we already have a number of beds at that level. In fact, we've got 60 in total. It includes beds in the central hospitals, it includes some step-down beds, intermediate care beds. If you take the whole total, Chair, then that's about 2,135. So it's not an insubstantial number of beds. But we recognize the fact that we obviously need more and we need to provide more. And so in the next 2 to 3 years, we will open another 216 beds. But where we will open the beds is quite an important issue to discuss because of the way the patients present. Most of those beds, barring 92 additional beds at Falkenberg Hospital, which is one of our prime key specialist psychiatric institutions, most of those beds would be at the district level. That's where we really want to focus our energy and attention, and at the regional hospital level bed. So that's really going to be the crux of where the strengthening service over the next 2 to 3 years will in fact lie. To give an example perhaps of what I mean by that, early in the new financial year, next year, 2014, we will open the first 30 of those beds at Mitchell Springs District Hospital. So it's a new district hospital, and there will be 30 additional beds that will open at Mitchell's Plain, and that's the first of a number of these beds. We will have 64 of the 216 beds, we will have 64 additional beds that will open at the regional hospital level. So these are the secondary level 2 type of facilities, and that will also include, Chair, the facilities in the more rural parts of the province, because there's also pressure, much as the metropole and the exploding substance dependence epidemic in the metropole affects us. We mustn't forget that the rural areas also need a strength to be strengthened. Then we will also strengthen the community-based services. And I note in the presentation from the national department that some of these following services have already, in fact, have always been open in the province, but we will roll it out throughout the Western Cape. These are the daycare services, the group homes, the 24-hour residential facilities, and the psychosocial support groups. So all of those will be strengthened and will be rolled out. Chair, I don't have much time, so I probably should cut this short. I could probably talk for much longer. But maybe just to end with some of the challenges that we face. We're not immune to what the challenges are. And we're obviously working quite close with our colleagues in the province, that Professor Lunt and his colleagues and other colleagues in the department, in terms of trying to address those challenges. But one of the key challenges is the pressure on the acute services. So these are, because of exploding substance dependency epidemic and substance abuse epidemic, obviously this is crowded out in a sense, the acute beds, and that is a pressure point. And so some of that increase in beds that I was referring to would obviously go to addressing that. Along chain, I think you reflected on the social determinants, I guess, of ill mental health, the poverty and crime, and that exploding epidemic in itself, the increase in violence. Obviously, along with that would go an increase in need for forensic type of services in the province. And part of the 92 additional beds that we plan for Falkenberg Hospital will go to addressing an expanded forensic service, so that we can obviously reduce the waiting trial prisoners and address that part of it. So that's a second area of pressure and challenging. A third area, obviously, the child and adolescent services, because often these particular services are for the most vulnerable group in our society, and these are often neglected services. And so that is a challenge, and part of the expanded plan, particularly at the CBS community and in fact acute hospital level, would be to address that as well. Yeah, just in a nutshell, I think I'll sort of end with that. I mean, in terms of the Western Cape's response, I mean, if there are more specific questions, yeah, as you indicated, we'll be around to address them.
Thank you. I think you are the dean that is written here, Carol. The CEO.
Yeah, I'm not his professor. I'm the chief director, general specialist and emergency services, and psychiatric hospitals and mental health falls within my cluster that I am responsible for. Ms. Carol Dean is the CEO of Falkenberg Hospital, which is one of the institutions that I was referring to. It's one of the institutions that falls within my cluster.
Thank you.
But we look alike.
Thank you very much for that information. I hope you are not going to leave us wait for questions that are going to be coming, especially that in the city. But we can't go on with for that into taking grant, which is the program for improving mental health, which is a research unit in the city, which has been part of organizing this event. And we're very grateful that they really pushed us and they've been a catalyst. Can we call on mental health service user and advocate Samantha Hanslow? I'm hoping I'm pronouncing everything correctly. Samantha Hanslow. We want you this side, Samantha. It would be better if you're closer here than there. I want to be between two ladies.
Good afternoon. My name is Samantha Hensler, and I was a mental health user, and I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience as a mental health user. I decided to use public health facilities when I felt pregnant with my first child in 2004. And during my antenatal visits, I was asked to call in a screening tool for mental health illnesses, and it was just a routine tool. It took me about 5 minutes to fill in, and the results of this tool led them for the nurse to ask me if I'd like to see a psychologist who was available to me. I did. I saw a psychologist. And these visits was then coincided with my normal antenatal visits at this facility. And this visit with a mental health professional has made such a big change to me at the time. Because at the time I was experiencing some symptoms such as not feeling really, really excited about my baby, not really wanting to go out, and really, really emotional all the time. And I wasn't sure what this meant. It was my first pregnancy. Nobody else around me seemed to have experienced something like that. And so being able to see a psychologist made me just realize that it's okay to feel like this, and there's a name for it, and there's a reason why I feel like this, and there's actually something that can be done with this to make this experience better. This was a very positive experience, and I think the care that I received there was really well done. I was routinely screened, referred, taken up, and that made my experience so much better. This, however, is very drastically contrasted with what happened when complications with my pregnancy. And I was, during one of those return antenatal visits, I was then found some high blood pressure and some other symptoms that suggested I needed to be admitted immediately. And I was admitted to a public health facility as a pregnant woman. You can just imagine the anxiety, the fear, the not knowing what's going to happen to you. And unfortunately, I had a really, really bad experience with nurses and doctors who were very, very abusive, verbally and emotionally at that time. So during the labor, things like shouting at me to be quiet and not scream when you have a contraction and not giving me the information about what's wrong with me and what's going to happen to me, and yeah, such kind of incidences made a really, really bad experience for me. And I was 24 years old, very young, very inexperienced, very scared, and felt completely powerless. This experience was then tempered by my experience with my psychologist, who I could still routinely see, and she made such a big difference. And what I wanted to add on, that mental health care is often seen as a nice to have. Like, you have medical procedures and you go to hospital and you're seen to, and you see space and budget and opportunity, then you can see a mental health professional. So it's a nice to have add-on. But it's so important, though, that every medical procedure that you have has got some kind of a psychological or emotional part to it. And so I'd like to advocate for healthcare workers in frontline healthcare workers in public health facilities, just to understand that they have an effect on a person, not just medically. They didn't just, and I got excellent service, by the way. I was after a review and looking at how I was actually treated. Medically, I was treated really well. I was checked up well. Everything was done really well medically. That didn't take away, of course, from the experience that I had emotionally and psychologically, which took me a long time to recover from with a lot of help. So my work currently is with a health system strengthening company or program as part of the University of Stellenbosch. We actually working with the Department of Health to strengthen and capacity building for healthcare workers. But my part as a psychologist now, after that experience and everything, I completed my degrees and I'm now a psychologist. And I work at this program with doctors and nurses who work with frontline workers in primary healthcare facilities. And I work in an HIV program. But even there, when people come to a facility, a primary health facility, the only one they have often in the community sometimes that I visit, that's time when they could possibly get and be exposed to preventative care, such as the screening tool that was used in my case, where I was then referred to a psychologist who I'm sure saved so much more mental anguish further along the line. So my work and my passion right now is to work with healthcare workers, because often they are not trained, as was mentioned before, in how to deal with mental issues, but just to understand that when you see a patient, it's not a patient, it's also a person. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You want to run away? Oh, okay. No, you can run away from somebody else. Thank you very much, Samantha. There's what they call white coat hypertension. I'm not sure how many of us have heard about it. It is called white coat hypertension, high blood pressure. What it means is that as soon as I get into a doctor's room, my blood pressure goes up. And that shows how you get affected psychologically by certain things, and you think that it's a physical disability, only to find that you just need psychotherapy to lower it. Hence, they do something that they give you a blood pressure that checks your blood pressure 24 hours, because once you get out of that, in front of that doctor, your blood pressure goes down. And your real blood pressure is the one that is outside, the one that went up. And the doctor could make a mistake and give you treatment for high blood pressure, only to find that you don't have it. It's only that you were scared, you didn't know what to expect in front of the doctor. Thank you very much, Samantha, for what you are doing. But people are going to be asking questions. Okay, can we go to the next speaker, which is South African Federation for Mental Health, SAFMH, Bhakti Patel. I'm hoping that.
Even though
The South African morbidity data indicates that neuropsychiatric disorders are the third highest contributor to the local burden of disease after HIV and other infectious disorders. A staggering 75% of people who live with mental disorders in the country don't receive the care that they do need. At the 2012 Mental Health Summit, there was a call for awareness and better planning for the treatment of mental illness. South Africa's mental health services are fragmented, unfairly distributed, and inadequately resourced. The rights of persons with mental disability continue to be violated despite our constitution and the ratification of the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Now, while the Federation welcomes the National Mental Health Policy Framework, we are very concerned as to how the implementation of the policy will be monitored in the provinces. The National Mental Health Policy Framework will require an increase in the share of health resources for mental health in line with the burden imposed by mental disorders. Now you may ask, who is the South African Federation for Mental Health? We are a national non-governmental organization constituted by 17 mental health societies and over 87 member organizations throughout the country. These organizations already provide a wide range of services, from counseling, early childhood development, schools and training centers, family support, service user empowerment, income-generating projects, group homes, residential centers, protective workshops, licensed homes for persons with severe or profound mental disability, holiday or respite care centers. Despite the decrease in funding received from government, the Federation has creatively grown its own services to the most vulnerable and poverty-stricken communities in South Africa. The NGO sector has been recognized for its delivery of the most cost-effective services, as well as the development of prevention and promotion programs that address the needs of the mental health care users in the country. The National Office of the Federation, based in Randburg in Gauteng, focuses on five key areas: capacitation, research, human rights awareness, and advocacy. Now, the Federation has played a key role in assisting the government departments in providing mental health services where there was no provision made for service delivery. However, there are ongoing challenges experienced by the NGO sector, and there is no parity in terms of resource allocation in the various provinces. Our consumer advocacy movement played a pivotal role in providing input in the country report on the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability. Yet, the service user movement, is yet to be consulted on the National Mental Health Policy Framework. The Federation strongly supports the call made by our mental healthcare users, nothing about us without us, and therefore recommends that provision is made to include mental health care users in all planning and monitoring systems, as well as understand what is reasonable accommodation for persons with mental disabilities. The Federation also boasts a creative and interactive awareness campaign that seeks to not only eradicate stigma and discrimination against persons with mental disabilities, but to also educate communities about mental disorders. We believe that by partnering with the NGO sector, government will be able to ensure that the policy is effectively implemented in all provinces, and together we can make mental health a priority for all.
I'm sure you should have said that it should have added that we could develop better in addition to what you're saying. Thank you very much, Basti. Our next speaker is Elizabeth Matara. I was trying to look for her. I'm going to force you to come this side. There's a reason why I'm going to force you. As she is coming here, I want somebody to guess how old is she. If you would tell me, somebody who's going to get it right, I'll give them 20 rands to tell me how old is she. But we can talk about that after. I'll give 20 rands for somebody who gets the age right for her. I will tell you why I asked that, because I made a mistake So, but we'll allow her to talk, and then when she finishes, you can tell me how old is she. Elizabeth is coming from the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAG, South African Anxiety and Depression Group. So we're going to give over to her this 3 minutes so that you can talk to us. Okay, Elizabeth, after we'll talk about your age.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, to the members that are present here, and my colleagues in the mental health field, good afternoon. I will talk about the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, what we do, and also talk about the challenges that we face in the field of mental health in South Africa. We run a call center in Johannesburg, and the call center offers telephonic counseling to all our callers, and the volunteer counselors can speak in our 11 local languages. We receive about 400 calls per day. You can see the magnitude of the problems that our people are facing. And some of the problems range from, I don't know what to do with my very hyperactive child, to very severe problems like I'm depressed and I want to kill myself, or I have taken so many tablets and I don't know what to do. We run the mental health helpline for the Department of Health, and that line runs from 8 in the morning to 8 in the evening. And we have realized that we have quite a lot of suicide calls that we get. Statistics show that there are 22 people that kill themselves a day in South Africa, and there are 220 people that attempt suicide in South Africa. So you can see the magnitude of the problem. So really we are dealing with issues of depression, anxiety, phobia, PTSD, and so forth. We would like, if we can, to inform the House that if the Department of Health could quickly come up with a national South African suicide prevention surveillance program that will indicate and show us the magnitude of the problem and what can be done to our country. We also run suicide prevention programs in schools, where we go to schools as trained teams of people that go to talk class by class to our children. As you know, we are going into a very difficult year in terms of the exams, the end of year matric exams, and also when the results come out. We receive a lot of calls during that time. We are also running a substance abuse helpline for the Department of Social Development at a national level, and the helpline is open 24 hours, and we also have some promotional materials that we distribute to communities, and we are running a door-to-door campaign in all 9 provinces, and we are setting up support groups that are looking at how people at a grassroots level can help each other on issues of substance abuse in the absence of adequate resources and referral centers. So we distribute these wristbands, and these wristbands indicate or advertise the helpline number as well as the SMS. And I said this line runs for 24 hours. We have also been very sensitive in terms of producing our materials, in terms of looking at the language challenges that we have. So these small booklets are produced at the moment in 5 languages. This year we are going to produce these books in other 2 more languages. Issues of literacy is a problem, and what we have done is we have come up with this tool called a speaking book, and this speaking book is looking at assisting those people that cannot read the materials that we distribute in terms of pamphlet form. And this book here speaks to the person so that the person uses their hearing or seeing senses in order to understand the message about their mental health.
It has all built a drug-free society. What is substance abuse? Substance abuse is when someone uses drugs or alcohol again and
say the whole book. This particular one, I'm just showing you how sensitive we are in terms of the people that we work with, so that they understand the information in their own languages. This particular one, I will say it myself. It is saying, ukuzwisisa ukugula ngengqondo. So this is in isiZulu, and it helps with understanding your mental health. That's what the title of the book is. And by so doing, I'm very grateful for the Department of Social Development in supporting this program that they've been supporting us since 2008. We also run support groups throughout South Africa. At the moment, we have 238 support groups that we run. Those that are running substance abuse programs plus mental health, there are 91 that were formed over a span of 1 year since last year. We have just got some funding. I'm so happy, and the funding starts today. Chairperson, I remember when I came here a few months ago, I did allude to the fact that we speak about mental health as a separate entity from HIV and AIDS, and yet these two are closely linked, including substance abuse. So today we are going to start a project that is looking at integrating mental health into HIV AIDS work, and we'll be working in Ivory Park, and we are targeting 3 schools and 2 clinics in that area. We also do quite a lot of advocacy, and our advocacy is focused on engaging policymakers both at provincial, national, and at parliament level. And to achieve that, we conduct public education to communities by using either the media or also going to talk to them. Having said all this, we face some challenges as people that are working with grassroots people. The first thing is, we acknowledge that the National Department of Health have made strides in terms of ensuring that mental health services, mental health programs are in place. But we are concerned that these intentions are welcome, but I think these intentions now have to go into action. If you look at when our Mental Health Care Act was enacted in 2002, those that can suppress meth, it's 11 years, and we are still talking about coming up with plans, coming up with policies. We are still going to get money in the year 2013, 2014. Let's turn those intentions into action. We are worried also about the access to quality in mental health care. We receive a lot of calls where people are turned away at hospitals because, one, there are no beds. Two, the nurses at a casualty do not understand how to help such individuals. And three, we are really concerned about financing. We cannot talk about we are going to ask for money. And yet, at the moment when we look at how much money is being spent on mental health, total health budget, we are looking at probably just under 4% is spent on mental health services for now. That's why our services are deteriorating. I would like to just say one statement, and that statement is, Honorable Chair, I'm asking for political will, for political commitment in terms of opening a debate like this one to go further, not just for today on the 10th of October, but to be an ongoing exercise that recognizes and gives mental health the attention that it deserves. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Fortunately, there are politicians here. They are listening. We've got members of the... Thank you very much, Elizabeth. If you've decided to guess her age, you can tell me outside. How old do you think she is? I'll give you the promised money. Okay, can we go on and ask somebody from Debeke, mental health service user and science journalist, and some investor, come forward.
It feels as if someone took a glove covered in glass and sharp metal and buried it deep inside my brain. It scratches and scratches in the chambers of my soul. It feels as if I'm resting, residing inside my own body. The night is dark and vast in front of me. The illness is so complex I cannot live with it any longer. An overriding panic has taken hold of me. I'm busy dying. No consolation can calm me. It feels like an everlasting heart attack. I'm manic. I know, and I have to go to hospital. Honorable members and friends, today I speak to you not as a science journalist, but as someone with bipolar mood disorder. Yet I'm highly functional due to proper medical treatment and hard work on my part. The scene I've read played out in 2001 when I was 28, and also described in a book that I wrote about this illness. I was hospitalized 3 times in 9 months, and I also received 18 shock therapy treatments before I stabilized. But I'm not here to plead my own case today. I need you to know that we do not have enough long-term psychiatric facilities and hospitals in this country. Most hospitals only admit patients for observation for 3 days. Believe me, when you are really sick and you need acute treatment in state hospitals, you need at least 21 days or however long as an inpatient. I know that I've been there, and I've also been turned away from Falkenberg Hospital because there wasn't enough beds. The available beds seems enough, 2.1 per 100,000 people, but it's not, because many of them does not offer a longer stay, especially in rural areas. There aren't even enough beds in the private sector. I've also been turned away there. These 2 new hospitals in Mitchells Plain and Fowlicha were built without psychiatric beds. They were added later on when they discovered their mistake. Sometimes very outdated medicines, rather than the better novel ones, are used in the state sector for psychiatric illnesses. Their side effects are dreadful, and they're not as effective as the modern ones. There is a myth that psychiatric illness cannot be treated and that we will end up as dependents of the state. It is not true. With the right treatment, the vast majority of patients can be valuable and functional members of society. We cannot, nor can we think positive and be cured. Mental illness is biological and needs medical intervention. Most cannot be cured, but it can be managed really well. Great success has been made in the past 30 years to break down stereotypes and stigmas regarding HIV and AIDS. But I wish that our leaders would step forward and speak up. Do the same for us. Non-communicable diseases are on the increase, and illnesses such as anxiety, panic disorder, depression, and bipolar mood disorder are now affecting 1 out of 5 people. And I leave you with the message of our company, which is our values: courage, respect, accountability, and integrity. Please treat us with dignity and help to treat our illness. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think this is talking directly to the stigma. It's talking directly to the stigma, but I'm not going to go further than that. Thank you very much. Now we're going to call on Prof. Kirkland, a director and prime CEO, the one that I've been talking about. He's from Alan Fisher Center for Public Mental Health. Thank you very much. So I'm going to call on him to talk to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you very much to everybody who's attended today. It really is a great occasion to have the World Mental Health Day marked in this way in Parliament, in this formal way, and we'd like to thank Parliament very much for hosting this and for giving a public forum for the debate of this very, very important and often neglected issue. It's also a great inspiration to see people who are mental health service users coming to openly share their stories, to hear from people from the NGO sector, from the Department of Health, the Department of Social Development, And what is particularly inspiring about this day is to see the unity of the message. I think we all acknowledge there is a major problem. We know that around one in six South Africans in any given year will have a diagnosable mental disorder, and that during the course of their lifetimes, around 30%, almost one in three of us will have a diagnosable mental health problem. And so this is a major public health issue that needs to be taken seriously and to be given the appropriate resources and budgets. And I think we're starting to see the tide change. I think there's real policy commitment from the Department of Health, especially, to translate this into action. It was particularly heartening to see Mr. Sifiso Phakathi present budget allocations for the establishment of community mental health teams in each of the pilot NHI sites. And this is a real sign of commitment and of moving forward and taking this seriously. There are a number of international developments which are happening in parallel with this, and I wanted to try and draw your attention to some of these if I can, Chair. The first is the WHO, the World Health Organization, in April, May this year, adopted with the full consent of all the member states present a WHO Global Mental Health Action Plan to which all the UN member states will be accountable, and sets out very clear targets and indicators for the scaling up of mental health services, particularly at primary healthcare level and at community level, between 2013 and 2020. And those of us who are working in the academic and research sector are working very closely with governments to try and develop monitoring systems to ensure that those deliverables are in fact delivered and that we see an improvement in the quality of life and in the mental health status of people who need care in our countries. I wanted to just briefly describe to you the Programme for Improving Mental Health Care, or PRIME, which is together with Parliament hosting this event today. We are a consortium working across five low and middle income countries. We're working in Ethiopia, India, Nepal, South Africa and Uganda. We receive funding from the Department for International Development in the UK. And we're working over a six-year period, initially to develop mental health care plans in one district site in each of these five countries, and then to scale up those mental health care plans to other district sites. And it's particularly encouraging. We're working very closely with the National Department of Health and with the Department of Health in the Northwest Province in the Kenneth Kaunda District. And my colleague, Professor Inge Peterson, who's here, will be describing a bit more of that work. But during the next 2 to 3 years, we'll be evaluating how those mental health care packages are implemented, and then working closely with the Department of Health to scale these up through the pilot NHI sites and hopefully through other provinces across the country. So I just wanted to briefly give that message and to thank you very much to the Parliament for hosting us today, and to encourage us all to move forward with this very important area. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much, Prof. He's from UCT. Now we're going to call on Prof. Ian Patterson from Prime South Africa. She's based in UKZN. I mean in KZN.
Thank
you. So she's the Prime Principal Investigator. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good afternoon to Honourable members of the House, public and colleagues. As Professor Lund said, I'm going to just talk a bit more about what we're doing on the ground with the Programme for Improving Mental Health Care in South Africa. And really want to start by congratulating the Department of Health on the Mental Health Action Plan that was presented by Mr. Phakathi. What we're doing in PRIME, though, is actually taking some of those objectives and trying to implement them. I think that there have been a number of calls from speakers who said, well, these are wonderful plans, how, you know, the real issue is how to implement them. And so that is what we're doing, and we're collaborating very closely with the Department of Health to do this. And we're working in one district as a start, in the Dr. Kenneth Kaunda District in the Northwest Province, which is one of the NHI sites. And it is also one of the sites where they are implementing the integrated chronic disease management model, which is very innovative, and the Department of Health has developed that model in response to the clashing epidemics that our country is confronted with. So with HIV, moving toward, with the rollout of ARVs, HIV is moving towards a chronic condition. So over 2 million people already are on ARVs in this country. And in tandem with that, we have a rise in other non-communicable diseases, so in particular cardiovascular disease, diabetes, etc. So the profile of our patient population is changing from much more acute care towards the need to provide chronic care. So we need to change healthcare alongside that. And so the Department of Health is now piloting this integrated chronic management disease model in, I think it's 3 districts, and Dr. Kenneth Quand is one of those. And what we are looking at is integrating mental health care into that chronic disease delivery service platform. In particular, we're looking at those disorders which have quite a high burden of disease. So schizophrenia, depression, and alcohol use disorder. With schizophrenia, we're working very closely with Department of Social Development and the NGO sector, in particular the mental health societies, to look at how practically, with using existing resources on the ground in deprived settings, how can we actually fill the gap in relation to psychosocial rehabilitation of people with schizophrenia, which is a severe mental disorder. And with decentralization, we often see that there is a bit of a revolving door syndrome where patients are discharged back into the community. They do receive ongoing medical care, but the psychosocial rehab is often lacking. It is available to some extent in your more urban centers, but in your more rural areas, it's a gap. Then in relation to depression, depression is a particular problem in relation to comorbidity with chronic diseases. So people who have HIV as well as other NCDs are twice more likely to have depression than the normal population. And as Dr. Bacardi did indicate, in fact, depression is problematic when it's comorbid with chronic conditions because it can actually interfere with both prevention efforts as well as treatment efforts. So if you think about it, someone who's depressed is much more less likely to engage in healthy behaviors such as eating properly, exercise, or engaging in safe sex practices. And with regard to treatment, they're twice less likely to adhere to their treatment regime and self-care. So that actually poses a risk to the investment, the huge investment that South Africa has made and continues to make in the rollout of ARVs. And it's also going to compromise the burgeoning cost of NCD care. So it's crucial, in fact, that we actually start by integrating depression care with chronic disease care. And how are we doing that? We're doing it with the Department of Health, with strengthening Primary Care 101, which is your integrated set of chronic disease guidelines for nurses, which was mentioned earlier, as well as adding an adjunct counseling intervention. Now, as was mentioned in the Mental Health Care Action Plan, the idea is to strengthen psychological services at your primary health care clinic. We do not have enough psychologists to do that, to actually service all our primary health care clinics, or even, relatively few across the country. So what we are doing is working with existing counselors, your HIV counselors, and we've developed and are implementing counselor guidelines so that they can actually provide counseling for depression in your chronic care population. And this is aligned towards the shift towards an integrated chronic disease management model as opposed to your vertical HIV service. So basically that is in a nutshell what we're doing at the moment. on the ground, and we're going to be evaluating it through two randomized control trials. The one is funded by NIH, and the other one will be funded by PRIME. And the outcome, well, the one will look at ART, the improvement in health outcomes for ART patients, and we're going to look at viral loads to see whether it's in fact it does improve adherence, as well as health outcomes in your NCD population. And just on a final note, in terms of cost-benefit, we're also going to be doing those analyses, but the one exemplary intervention that was done in a high-income country where they integrated depression care with NCDs showed a cost saving of $600 over 24 months of per patient on outpatient costs. So I think that it is very smart to integrate mental health into your chronic disease care management platform.
Thank you. That was the principal investigator for Program for Improving Mental Health Care. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your input. I'm sure there's going to be questions that are going to come. Now let's go on to the last speaker, a mental health service user and advocate. The chairperson of the Cape Consumer Advocacy Body, Oscar Janyaga. I'm not sure whether he is here. Oscar Janyaga. You mustn't worry, ladies and gentlemen, there's not going to be February and March. This is the last one. January is the last one.
Good day. In my experience as a mental health care user and mental health care advocate, there has been some progress in the mental health care sector. There's been a shift from hospitalization to community-based health care, and this is good, but there are still insufficient resources and services in the community. Increase in drug and alcohol abuse adds to the burden of mental health care, and concern arises how this will be accommodated in the future. Mental health care users have to wait long hours at community health centers only to be turned away as there's insufficient stock. When they need hospitalization, there's a lack of available beds. One of our members have had to wait for 5 days sleeping on chairs awaiting hospitalization. Service users are even discriminated against by health professionals, and this adds to the burden of stigma they face in their everyday lives. There is a rising global concern about mental illness, as it will account for 15% in 2020, making it the second most disabling condition in the world. This is why we should make mental health a South African priority.
That was Oscar January. That was the last speaker. All the speakers have been requested to be sitting around, so now it's open for questions. They were supposed to finish at 2:1400 hours. We started a little bit late, and I allowed people to go further than the 3 minutes deliberately, because I think this is an important issue for discussion. So I just want to apologize to Dr. Billet and the team that we're going to start a little bit late, but you will have time until you finish. I'm hoping that you're not rushing for plans to go. Welcome, and I apologize. So we'll start a little bit later, but it's open for questions. There's no February, March. It was January, the last one. So I'm sitting here to see those who want to ask questions. Questions of clarity or questions that you want to ask directly. If there are none, that doesn't cause any problem, but if there are, oh, I see there's a hand there. It's such a pity. It would have been very nice if I knew all your names, but unfortunately, I don't know everybody. Can you come late?
Okay.
There's a gadget in front of you that you could press.
Yes. I am traveling from the University of Western Cape School of Public Health. My question is directed to you as the chairperson of the of this committee, health. What is the government doing in connection with assisting in building churches like they assist in building schools, because I think to me from the rural areas that helps in prevention of mental health, and the people are suffering in building churches in rural areas. I do not know in urban areas. That's what I want to know, if the government is going to be committed in trying to help in preventing mental health, because some people believe that if you go to church and if you are being prayed for, it does help, especially with what we are facing right now, the children being attacked by the, although it's not referred, Satanists. People believe they are helped by spiritual healers. Secondly, I would love to know if the government, as from Mr. Pagati, from Government of Health, the government has any provisions in allowing to cater for holistic approach in clinics and hospitals, in providing licensed traditional healers and licensed spiritual healers in hospitals for clients that would believe and prefer to be seen by those. Last thing, I would love to know, Elizabeth, we have talked about the statistics of those that are committing suicide and those that are attempting suicide in South Africa. It's shocking, it's very hard. But I under, to my belief, it's that it is underreported. The contributing factor to underreporting the stats is the insurance policy. I would love to know what is the government going to do with the insurance policies, because they do not release financial support if a person has committed suicide. And that is, to me, a mental health problem. If you commit suicide, there is no person who cannot, who can commit suicide being mentally healthy. So if the insurances can be, the government can have a policy in discouraging them from adding to under-reporting suicide. Because if a person has committed suicide, if you report that, the insurances will not help you. You'll see to finish. So if they could allow that and accept it as a mental health problem and release funds if a person has committed suicide, I thank you.
Thank you, Chap. I didn't know that the first question is going to come to me. I didn't have to be asked questions myself. I wanted all the others to be asked questions, but not me. But I'll answer your question, Dabo. And Dabo Pagati and Abo Elizabeth, they're ready for your question. Can we jot them down, the question? I saw Honorable Sekgala. You can go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation and all the panelists. It is just unfortunate that the time allocated is too short. It could have really been a day which we really interact with a lot of people. But my first question is directed to the department. Do you know, I'm happy that you even indicated yourself that most of the psychiatric institutions are dilapidated and old structures, because the norm has been those buildings which were occupied by others, when they are built nice ones, those are converted to psychiatric hospitals, which is really not correct. In page 6, you talk about the PI, the primary health care service for mental health. What I would like to know that you find that mental health or psychiatry training is not a priority for a nurse to be working in the clinic. General nursing and midwifery are priorities. Then you find that other clinics don't have not even one psychiatry training clinic, and those people are manning the clinic. I want to know what are you going to do about that, because I don't feel that mental health is really taken very seriously. On page 7, there is this project, the project list from all the provinces. When I look at them, it's one size fits all. What are you intending doing with that money? Because you find that what is caused that in Western Cape may not be causing that in Northwest. At the end of the day, you find that the richest remain rich, the poorer because they are giving the same amount, not considering whatever. Can I be told why is, what criteria did we determine to have that? Then most of your indicators are saying you're going to establish, you're going to ensure, you're going to define, you're going to revitalize, but it doesn't have faith when. Because I won't like hold you responsible if you haven't done it next year when I'm getting out to be saying that how far are you? You just told me that you are going to do it, and you can still say to me, I didn't do it because I'm still going to do it. The last one, talking about, you said that you are going to emphasize the mental health service in the communities. And when you talk about the communities, you talk about clinics and health centers. And I said, I'm having a serious problem of reduction, and I know you may not answer it, but it can go to the South African Nursing Council. To be saying that now, which was done for 6 years, is now done for 4 years. Like, when what I'm talking about is the comprehensive nursing diploma. Initially, for you to have four qualifications, you should have done general for 3 years, midwifery for 1 year, psychiatry for 1 year, community health care service for 1 year, which is 6 years. But now it's 4 years. And what my concern is more emphasis is not put on like psychiatry nursing. When a nurse gets out of this diploma, going to run a clinic, you cannot really rely on her that he can really identify a psychiatry problem in a clinic. Can that be considered? Because psychiatry diploma was 1 year, and that to me was really sufficient. It really covers the curriculum of a diploma in psychiatry. Thank you, Chairperson.
It is unfortunate that we'll have to cut down on questions because of time, because at 3 o'clock we're supposed to be out of this room. So I didn't see any other hand. I'm not sure whether there's... Okay, you'll be the last one.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I'm Ingrid Daniels, and I'm Director of Cape Mental Health. Just to the Department of Health, thank you so much for presenting your plan going forward. Just wanted to thank you in advance for the roadshows that you will be initiating. I have a few questions, but I'll limit it to one, and particularly your page 7, which speaks to the implementation of services at district level. I'm concerned that your projected costs for the establishment of your district specialist mental health teams seem to only include salaries rather than cost of transport and other costs that will be associated with this initiative, and I would think that this is a pilot. I'd like to know how you intend to scale up this on a national level, considering that many of these professionals in these teams that you've identified are actually scarce skills in South Africa, and how you intend to work closely with NGOs who have been delivering services at the coal front with very limited resources for many years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure Bart is going to help us next to you. She must answer. She was one of the panelists. Let's welcome another Dr. Patel from the Department of Health. But I'm not sure whether it's coming from the mental health service area or it's coming from somewhere. But welcome. I'm sure you'll be part of answering questions because most of the questions are going to the Department of Health. So you'll help the director from where I'm talking to Anban Delay. I'm welcoming Anban Delay. Okay. Let me give over to the department to answer some of the questions. There was a question that was going to Elizabeth. So Elizabeth is ready. And any other panelists could answer some questions if they feel they are relevant. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm glad I've got backup now. Dr. Anban Delay, our DDG, is here. And I can see the rest of the team there. But also just to say, Chair, I'm also honored that in the House there are two members. Maybe I need to declare that. I thought they were going to declare themselves. Two members here who were part of the stakeholder group that was appointed by the department to actually finalize the mental health policy and plan. Professor Crickland here, as well as Bharti Patel. So some of the responses to the questions of the plan, I suppose, they will cover up in areas that are not clear to me. But maybe to start off with the last one, how we plan to scale up this ambitious plan. It is ambitious. Actually, when we presented this plan both to the Technical Advisory Committee as well as the National Council, what we then learned is that there are many lessons that we're just learning from the other specialists in attracting them to the pilot sites. So we know it's an issue, and I think that is the reason why we would like to pilot. In terms of the detail why we didn't put it here, this is just an example of one in terms of costing the broad aspects. There's a fully developed plan in terms of what constituted this office space, equipment that they will use, and all that. But many of the lessons will emerge as we implement this plan. And that is why we're piloting it and scale it up, having considered what we've learned from the pilot sites. I think the question from Honorable Sihala, I'm working backwards, on the issue of nurses. The summit's pronounced exactly as you have put it, that one of the challenges we've got to look at, again, that four-year training and how it is done. And coming from those summits already, the Director General referred this matter to the Registrar of the Nursing Council. I am privy to some of the work. I can safely say to you that there's a tough team that is working on this matter to review the curriculum and the standards for this group. The comments around the infrastructure, again, you hit it on the spot. Even recently, there's a facility that the Minister had to ask that we should move the patients, because a new building had been built, but no provision was made for the psychiatric patients, and then they were then moved to the old building. Certainly, it was found not to be complying to the standards required. So that's it. The targets are contained in the mental health policy framework, detailed. It goes to say by when would we have done this. I did apologize that we did not bring the document because it's still going to print. We don't have the hard copies for that, but it is in detail and guiding us. I think the issues around primary health care, with what you heard from Prof. Inge and Prof. Land here, one of the game changers that was proposed by the task team was that the district mental health teams will use a public health approach to looking at the mental health problems in the district. So for instance, they will then go in and look at the burden in that area so that we do not generalize and use one shoe fits all. So they look at a particular district and identify the priorities. If, for instance, the priority is substance abuse related issues or comorbidity in that district. So it will then get an emphasis in terms of how you intervene. The question around using a holistic approach, I concurred with Cricket. The Mental Health Summit pronounced on the need to collaborate with traditional healers as well as the spiritual healers. If you go to the department website and just look for the Ekurhuleni Declaration 2012, you will find in the 11 action areas that there was pronouncement on what we need to do working with traditional healers and faith-based healers. What then in the plan the task team advised the ministry to do, Chair, was that seeing that there's work that is proceeding around, say, traditional healers, that legislation and all, that there will be a system to register them and all that, let's get that set up from that platform. How to work with them from mental health or the different programs will then emerge as the traditional healers are getting registered and all that. But in practice, all of us do understand that many of mental people with mental disorders probably start there, or health problems. We also understand that in principle, the referral happens both ways because people do believe in both systems. I think that was all directed at me. Thank you, Chair.
I'm not sure whether Prof, you want to add or but you want to add.
Just to add on the area of the district mental health teams, I think it's a really important point that Sabiso commented on. But essentially what we envisage is that these district mental health teams will adopt a public health approach to the mental health of that district. So they'll look at the conductive situation analysis of the district, the existing mental health services, the extent of primary health care provision. They'll consult with all the different stakeholders. And then they'll start to develop referral pathways from primary health care, from the community level, using the existing resources, for example, using community health workers and primary health care nurses to establish an overall treatment package for mental health for that district. They'll also look at promotion and prevention more broadly as well. So one of the key areas is mothers and pregnancy and ensuring that mothers who have mental health problems are able to access basic counseling and have routine screening as part of their antenatal care. So they'd ensure, for example, that those systems are in place. And I think it's going to be a work in progress. We're going to see how it works initially in the 11 pilot NHI sites and then learn from that and then move forward from there. Thank you.
Thanks, Prof. Patsy, you want to add something?
I think just to make sure that we answer all the questions Ingrid has posted in terms of, you know, the NGO services that do exist, I think it's very important to highlight that, like Chris had mentioned, is that whatever existing services are available, we need to, piggyback on those services, make sure they are adequately resourced to provide adequate mental health services in those communities that have been identified.
Thank you. I'm sure, Jabu, that answers even the church part of it, that last part that was said. I'm not sure whether Elizabeth has got something. You know, somebody sat next to me. He told me that how old you are, but she was wrong. I'm not going to say what did she say, but she was wrong. She didn't give the right age. Okay, come, Elizabeth. You are the last one.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question is relating to under-reporting in terms of suicide. I'm happy to report that we're part of the organization as an NGO that presented at the Mental Health Summit. And the recommendations that we put together with Professor Sherwood, who is a professor and a specialist in suicide and also an advisor to the WHO Global Suicide Prevention Program. And our recommendations are in the pronouncement 9, if I get that correctly, where we were recommending that the department set up what probably could be called the South African National Suicide Surveillance Program, so that it will capture all the suicides that take place. Our statistics, as well as what Professor Shelbush has published, indicate that most of these statistics are actually found from the police. So it means that if you are in a rural area and you commit suicide, and because of the stigma that is attached to suicide in our culture, these suicides are not reported. But there is an undertaking by the department, because it's there in the mental health policy framework under pronouncement 9. But I will not at this stage comment about policies, because I think someone needs to do advocacy in terms of what policy the policies industry should do to those people that commit suicide and they are not able to access, you know, claims. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You'll be the last one. Okay, come. If you could just tell us who you are.
Thank you very much. I'm Simone Hanekman from the Perinatal Mental Health Project, a partner of Prime. Samantha was one of our clients, and Samantha Hensler and I want to thank you and honour you for speaking about your experience. I'm glad that we've spoken about maternal mental health, and hope that it'll be in the forefront of the minds of people who are making decisions and who are going to be doing implementation, especially as it links in with the key national Department of Health strategies around maternal health and child health. We understand, and there is a lot of evidence globally, that the mental health of mothers is directly related to the well-being of their children and families. And here again, we have a unique opportunity to intervene right at the beginning in terms of early childhood development, in terms of a whole range of child outcomes, not only physical outcomes, but other outcomes, as well as strengthening our communities from the core. So I'm hoping that will be recognized in a lot of the work as a cross-cutting issue, and thank you very much for that attention. And it's also very, very pleasing to see that the new plan has embedded maternal mental health issues in various aspects and various iterations within the plan.
Thank you.
Other questions?
I don't think we need to respond to that, except to thank you for thanking them. Jabu, I suspect your question about churches has been answered. And in fact, even part of doing this was to make people aware of how many NGOs are there. Sort of it's like an advocacy. And we know that most of the people, they go to churches when they become depressed or they've got challenges. And even ourselves as politicians, we are there to go and talk to them. Especially if they are organized, then they could look for something that will help them, somebody from the NGO and so on. But we can talk about that even later. I think it's left for me to thank, I want to specifically thank Uamin Makan for working so hard, Jagulela. I mean, he has been the one who has been working so hard to make sure that this is a success coming from Ram. Thank you very much, Amit. You have done a very good work. And in fact, we can see the success of what you have done. And it's not going to end up here today. It's going to be broader than what we are seeing here today. And as we said, South Africa cannot develop with all the mental challenges, mental health challenges that it has, until we deal with those directly and head on. It's going to be a tough exercise, but we're going to do it. Thank you very much. I'm trying to thank Brian by thanking Amit, because he's the person that I've been in contact with. But thank you very much, Brian, for doing what you have done and doing what you are doing for South Africa, even if you are just at the today, you might not see the results today. You see them 20 years to come. And by that time, some of us will be dead, but it doesn't matter. We're not doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for our community so that they could develop. Thank you very much. We must thank Parliament for agreeing to the suggestion that we should have this. And Parliament agreed without any reservations. They said we could hold this in Parliament and publicize it. And in fact, that is reducing the stigma that is there. And all of us, we want to have a better South Africa, a developing better South Africa. Thanks to all the speakers. Some of them were very touched with some of the things that were happening here. But at the same time, they are removing the stigma that is always there about psychiatric problems. Definitely, we need to continue with this. This should not be the end of it. It's something that we need to continue doing time and again, this debate, and that will remove the stigma. So thank you very much, members of Parliament. We know you are hard working, you are doing a lot of work, but you decided we are going to be here. I'm so sorry for those who were supposed to have a meeting starting at 2 o'clock, but sorry, we hope you understand our apology. It's time for lunch. We targeted that at 3 o'clock there's going to be lunch. I'm not sure how many people, but if you are sitting next to me, she has organized lunch. So there's going to be lunch, and soon after that lunch, we're going to have another meeting with the NHLS. So thank you very much, everybody. Whatever that we're doing is over now. Thank you.
Thank you.